The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
For decades, the power of women's hormone shifts has been unrecognized and underestimated. Most women have a lack of education when it comes to the endocrine system and how and why our hormones affect our minds, moods, and behaviors. Welcome to Holy Hormones, Honey, with your host, Leslie Carol Botha, sponsored by True Hope, the leaders in brain health. When women thrive, everyone thrives. That is True Hope. Now, here is your host, Leslie Botha.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Holy Hormones, Honey, the greatest story never told. I am Leslie Carol Botha, your host. This show is all about hormone health, mood disorders, and the importance of micronutrient support. The topics are cutting edge, informative, and life-changing. Today's episode is called Anatomy of an Epidemic, The Hidden Danger of Wonder Drugs. And Robert Whitaker comes back as my guest, and I'm always glad to have him on the show. He asks if wonder drugs like Prozac are really helping people. Why has the number of Americans on government disability due to mental illness skyrocketed from 1.25 million in 1987 to over 4 million today? In fact, 20% of all women are now on antidepressants, and 20% of boys have been diagnosed with ADHD. And that brings me to breaking news that is happening as we speak. This article has appeared on BBC News, all the business journals around the country. You're going to be seeing it over and over again. Controversial supplement in Power Plus proven effective. That's the True Hope in Power Plus, sponsors of Holy Hormones, Honey, the greatest story never told. The release date today states the British Journal of Psychiatry reports significantly robust improvement in ADHD and depression symptoms. Treatment was much more effective than placebo. And here's the release. Researchers at the University of Canterbury in Christchurch, New Zealand, have found in a double-blind study that a nutritional supplement, True Hope in Power Plus, has significant benefits for adults with psychiatric symptoms of ADHD, depression, hyperactivity, impulsivity, and inattention. Dr. Julia Ruckledge and her team of researchers successfully completed the placebo-controlled study, which was published today in the British Journal of Psychiatry. This is history, folks. This is history. The release goes on to say, in the study, researchers reported, we demonstrated that micronutrient treatment induced statistically robust improvements in several indices. Specifically, participants taking the micronutrient formula reported greater improvement in both inattention and hyperactivity impulsivity compared with those taking a placebo. Dr. Ruckledge further reported hyperactivity impulsivity scores were reduced into the normal non-clinical range with micronutrient administration, but not placebo. The research publication also identified a major reduction in symptoms of depression in those suffering with moderate to severe depression. A further exploration of the MADRS scores revealed a significant difference favoring the micronutrient group when a subsample of those with moderate or severe depression at baseline was examined. According to the researchers, 47.6% of the micronutrient group were very much improved over the 8-week study. Anthony Steffen, founder of True Hope, the producer of Empower Plus, stated, This research now places True Hope and Power Plus in a new class of first-line treatments for many of the most common mood disorders. The safety profile of the product has been researched extensively and has been proven to be safe in use over the past 16 years. Dr. Rutledge states in the publishing, "These results are consistent with a review of over 140 patients treated with this micronutrient formula, which did not identify any significant adverse effects or safety concerns." And as we say here, nutrition should be the primary treatment, medication the supplement. The timing of this press release with my guest, Robert Whitaker, and the topic, Anatomy of an Epidemic, the Hidden Danger of Wonder Drugs, could not be more important. So Robert Whitaker, let's introduce you, get you on the show, and start talking about your work, your book, Anatomy of an Epidemic, Magic Bullet, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Astonishing Rise of Mental Illness in America, and start enlightening our listeners one more time. Welcome.
Well, it's very nice to be here, and thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, we had a really lively discussion in October, I believe. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned to you before the show, I haven't even gotten through your book, Anatomy of an Epidemic, not because of its of the content and its density, if you will, or research, or it's just too overwhelming, just because it's so fascinating.
Well, you know, what I really try to do in Anatomy is take a big picture look at this paradigm of care we've embraced so much. I'm talking about the use of psychiatric drugs. You gave some of the statistics when you opened. I mean, the use of antidepressants is just incredible. The prescribing of stimulants to, you know, children diagnosed with ADHD. And, it, you know, obviously it's changing our society. And so the question I wanted to ask really is it working for us as a society? You know, is this paradigm of care improving our mental health? Is it diminishing the burden of mental problems, psychiatric problems in our society? And that's one thing I looked at. And the answer is no. You see, as reflected in the disability data, just the burden of you know, psychiatric disorders just going up and up in our society. And by the way, since I wrote Anatomy, there's been a number of translations of the book into, you know, different languages. And I've looked at the disability dates for those data for those countries such as Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Germany, Iceland. And what you find time and time again is every country that has adopted widespread use of these drugs, you see disability rates going up dramatically, which, of course, raises the question, what the heck is going on? And then having raised that question with the disability data, I looked at, well, what is science telling us about how these medications affect long-term outcomes? So, for example, do antidepressants, are they effective over the course of 3, 5, 7 years in sort of diminishing the recurrence of depressive symptoms, keeping them at bay, and also helping people live sort of full lives with employment, you know, socialization, that sort of thing? And what you find time and time again, and this is in studies conducted by, you know, the National Institute of Mental Health, you know, government bodies, and really authorities, and conducted by psychiatrists who very much believe in that paradigm of care. And what you find time and time again is that over the long term, these medications increase the chronicity of disorders. And by that I mean they increase the likelihood that someone who has a major depressive episode will still be depressed 3 years later, 5 years later, that sort of thing, or have more episodes of depression. And you see that in basically with every class of drugs. Even with, ironically enough and surprisingly enough, you even see it with the psychotic disorders. So you see that over the long term, medicated schizophrenia patients actually do worse, on the whole, than unmedicated patients, which sounds like complete heresy. But that's the result from the best 20-year study of schizophrenia outcomes we have, and it was recently confirmed through a randomized trial done in the Netherlands. So when you open this idea with it, it's an alarming book. It is an alarming book because it tells us that we are spending a lot of money and a lot of energy on a paradigm of care, and talking about a drug-based paradigm of care, that, you know, the drugs can be quite helpful in sort of ameliorating symptoms over the short term, at least for some people. Are they an approach that really helps improve sort of societal mental health over the long term? And clearly, they don't. And then finally, last thing is, in terms of alarming, you know, we're medicating so many kids. And these are, of course, the youth have developing brains. And so we really want to ask, is science showing us that this is a good and helpful thing to do? And when you look at what is happening to youth and adolescents once they're medicated long term, you really find some alarming, data.
You know, I want to take an aside, but it still ties into this point. I was reading an article this morning on Science Daily, and I follow that because there are some interesting health articles there. And this statement that I'm going to read kind of puts it all in a nutshell, and I want you to listen carefully. The title of the article is called Resetting Understanding the Metabolic Clock. The research came out of the University of California, Santa Barbara. All right, what is the metabolic clock? Let me just go into that. That's the circadian rhythm. That is the natural body's cycle that ties into all other rhythms of the universe. Now, here's the statement. Through intensive analysis and computer modeling, researchers have gained insight into factors that affect these oscillations with results that could lend themselves to circadian regulation and pharmacological control. Robert, do you have a comment on that?
Well, I'm not sure what it means by pharmacological control, because, of course, we've had drugs that have tried, sleeping pills for a long term. My comment is this. If we go back to the early 1900s, one of the first things that doctors tried to do when they had patients that were suffering from psychiatric disturbances, whether they be psychotic episodes or manic episodes, was restore, the sleep-wake cycle, because it's quite clear that, if you get that cycle out of balance or out of sync and people stop sleeping, that can lead to hallucinations. It just leads to bad mental health.
It does.
And so I think what you're seeing here is, first of all, some rediscovery of the importance of that cycle for mental health and obviously for physical health too. Then the question arises, once we understand that, how do we promote it? And, this even gets to your opening with, micronutrients. I think you really promote good sleep-wake cycles through good nutrition, exercise, that sort of thing. And when you try to do sort of a drug control of the sleep-wake cycle, take a pill that'll help you go to sleep, the history tells us actually that sleeping pills are not very effective over the long term, and they don't really restore natural sleep, restorative sleep, for, say, 6-7 hours. So my response to the Science Daily News article is the more attention on sleep-wake cycles, that's fantastic. And then the question is just how do we promote, helping people maintain good sleep-wake cycles?
Well, it seems that if you have these micronutrient supplements that are helping to calm down the brain, I know many people these days who can't go to sleep without the television on or without headphones on, listening to music because their brain is so hyperstimulated. So we're calming down the brain, then we can relax enough to sleep. But let me ask you this. Let me rephrase the question, Robert. Instead of wonder drugs doing more harm than good, and we've kind of covered that lightly here in terms of antidepressants, antipsychotics, sleeping pills. So if wonder drugs are doing more harm than good, maybe we should be asking if psychiatry is doing more harm than good.
Well, it's pretty easy. So psychiatry really embraced this drug-based paradigm of care in 1980 when it issued its third edition of its Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. And since then, our use of these drugs has just soared, and we were told this story about the drugs fixing chemical imbalances in the brain, which isn't true. So that paradigm of care has done more harm than good. I think it's quite clear. I mean, we've pathologized children during this time, which isn't a good thing, both in terms of the treatment that follows over the long term, and even, I think, for their self-image. Depression has, used to be not that, if you look at sort of the burden of depression in our society 35 years ago, it wasn't nearly so much as it is today. So the more the psychiatry talks about depression and sort of seeks to educate the population about depression and treat it, what happens? It becomes more of a problem. So, you know, it's a really valid question. This model of care, this medical model that psychiatry has promoted since 1980, has it done more harm than good? Absolutely. I mean, that's what the data is showing. And really that model is collapsing intellectually now in so many ways. So maybe it's time for psychiatry to rethink what it tells the public, rethink its approaches. But the last 30 years have been a disaster.
And we've all been affected. One of the pieces from your book, which I have related on the show time and time again, and it's stuck with me, and we talked about it as well, when you came out with the statement saying that the first people who took these neuropsychotropics back in the, 40s, 50s, and 60s?
50s and 60s, yeah.
50s and 60s, thank you, that their brains were forever altered. Which leads us then to the next point of what are the long terms and the generational effects of these psychiatric drugs?
Right. This is getting into an important issue. So when you take and we can cycle back and explain why micronutrients might be so different. So what a psychiatric drug is, it basically perturbs or interrupts some normal functioning of the brain. So for example, an antidepressant, an SSRI antidepressant like Prozac, what does it do? Well, the way neurons communicate in the brain, you have one neuron that releases serotonin into this tiny gap between neurons, and then the normal process is for that chemical messenger, that serotonin, to just be in that tiny gap for a fraction of a second and then be taken back up into the neuron that released it. So what Prozac does is prevent that normal reuptake process, okay? It's an abnormalizing agent. It perturbs normal function. And in response to that, this gets to your question, the brain tries to compensate for this interruption of its normal function. And the way it will compensate, say for once you go on an SSRI, is two ways. That releasing neuron will start putting out less serotonin than normal, and the receiving neuron will actually decrease the number of its receptors for that molecule. So what you do is, the drug is trying to drive serotonergic activity into an accelerated state, and the brain, trying to maintain an equilibrium, now goes physiologically into a subserotonergic state, you know, a deficient serotonergic state in essence, and that becomes the new balance. Well, the problem is, does that sort of, accelerator brake model work real well over the long term? No. That's one. Two, then when you come off and you remove that accelerator, what's left? You have this system now that's in a sort of deficient state. That becomes problematic, both for withdrawal symptoms. And now you're getting to a third thing. So
let's leave it there, and that's where we'll come back.
Okay.
Thank you, Robert. You're listening to Holy Hormones, Honey, the greatest story never told. We'll be right back.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you taking medications for depression, anxiety, or hyperactivity? Are you one of the millions of people who have experienced negative side effects from your medication? Do you notice that you just don't feel like yourself? For decades, the nutrient therapy leaders at True Hope have helped tens of thousands of children and adults replace their medications with Empower Plus, an all-natural multivitamin and mineral complex clinically proven to fix the issues rather than cover them up. If you or someone you know is ready for a natural solution that works, go to www.truehope.com to learn more. 20 medical journal publications show that the Empower Plus formulation can replace harsh medications. Thousands of people taking all-natural Empower Plus are medication-free without a return of symptoms. Go to www.truehope.com or call 888-878-3467 to try a bottle of Empower Plus today. Type in offer code RADIO for 25% off your first order. Again, that's www.truehope.com or 888-878-3467. Understanding your mind, mood, and hormone cycle is dedicated to all the women who have ever experienced a hormone fluctuation, to the generations of women who have died because they had forgotten the source of their being. The richly illustrated groundbreaking book, co-authored by Leslie Carroll Botha and H. Sandra Chevalier Batik, is the product of a 9-year project, which represents the author's shared passion and unified purpose to provide women with the education they need to reclaim their bodies and their souls. Find the book today. Click the link on the radio show page.
Step into a healthier you. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to Holy Hormones, Honey, with Leslie Carroll Botha. To call into our program today, please dial 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to leslie@holyhormones.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everyone. Today's episode is called Anatomy of an Epidemic, The Hidden Danger of Wonder Drugs. My guest is Robert Whitaker, an award-winning science reporter who has explored the history of mental illness in America with disturbing results. In his new book, Anatomy of an Epidemic, Magic Bullets, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Astonishing Rise of Mental Illness in America, Whitaker breaks all sorts of boundaries and talks about the history. We're going to get to that in a moment, but we had to take a break. Robert, I do want to go back to the long-term effects of psychiatric drugs and what that is doing. And you were talking about the sub-serotonergic effect in the brain when you're adding SSRIs or serotonin uptake.
Right.
Through synthetic drugs. Let's go back to that and go through those three talking points that you were starting to go through.
Right. So we have an understanding that these drugs fix known chemical imbalances in the brain. So, for example, we were told that depression is due to low serotonin, the drug ups serotonergic activity, and therefore it's like insulin for diabetes, and it fixes this imbalance. Well, that's just not true. What researchers found is that people who are diagnosed with major depression, there is no abnormality in their serotonergic system, no characteristic abnormality at all. Then when you use the drug, which tries to accelerate serotonergic activity, and now your brain, in response to that, tries to dial down its serotonergic activity. So here's the irony. We were told that low serotonin can cause depression, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, before you go on an antidepressant, you don't have an abnormal serotonergic system. But after you go on an antidepressant, you do. In effect, the drug induces the very changes initially hypothesized to cause depression. So, and when your brain now adjusts for the presence of the drug and it dials down its serotonergic machinery, that means there's changes in gene expression that controls, for example, your receptors for the density of your receptors for serotonin. Now, let's say you go off the drug. Well, first of all, you can see why it could be a problem, because now your brain is in this abnormal state. It's become used to the presence of the drug. You take it away. That might cause withdrawal symptoms. But here's the new information. It's becoming quite alarming. We always presume that when you went off the drug, your brain would renormalize. In other words, receptor densities would return to normal, et cetera. Well, there's research showing that may not be the case. It's certainly not always the case. And in a significant percentage of patients, the brain may just never renormalize, especially after longer term on these medications. So that's a quite profound finding. And then you mentioned something related to epigenetics. And one of the things that researchers are now finding, which is quite surprising, is that when you get changes in gene expression in the adult who then becomes a parent, we never have thought that those changes in gene expression get handed down to the child, to the baby. Well, there is some sense now that they can get handed down. And if this is so, and now I admit at this point we're stepping into the speculative world, but one possibility is that you have a person who takes antidepressants a long time, and they get this change in gene expression, they then become pregnant and become a mother, do they hand down to their child, in essence, this altered serotonergic state that exists in their own brain? I don't know, but that's one of the worries. So what you can see from a societal point of view, when we as a society start taking these drugs in the, you know, in such an expansive way with such a large segment of our population, you even have this sense of how is this agent sort of affecting the larger mind of society. It's really, really a remarkable experiment we're running.
And I'm glad you called it an experiment. Because that is exactly what it is. You and I are both aware that these drugs are fast-tracked. They're studied for short-term use, sometimes a year or even less.
6 weeks.
Okay, you got me there. 6 weeks.
It would be nice if they studied it for a year.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to be on the generous side of, okay, 6 weeks or less, and yet we're on them for 10 or 15 years.
Right. There's no science showing.
There is no science showing
that that's a good thing.
One of the other things I loved about your book is that you provide a historical perspective on the advent of the whole field of psychiatry, and pharmacology. History is so important, people. And I was listening to a video of Dr. Peter Bragan, who's also big in this field and raising the red flag about the whole field of psychiatry. And Robert and I were talking about this during the break, is that psychiatry came into play sometime in the late 1930s in Germany, 1938. And Robert, you called them psychiatric patients a useless population or useless eaters. And actually, through sterilization, lobotomies, euthanasia, and killing centers with gas chambers, 75,000 people were eliminated in Germany, and this was before the Holocaust.
Well, it was the first stage of the Holocaust. And by the way, I'm not calling them useless eaters. That's what they were referred to in Germany.
Okay.
But what happened, and by the way, the U.S., something similar was going on. We got something first in the U.S. called eugenics, and the idea of eugenics, which arises out of a Darwinian understanding of evolution, is that there are certain people in your population with good genes, and there's certain people with bad genes, and if you want to keep a society healthy, you got to encourage the well-bred to have a lot of kids, and you got to prevent those with bad genes from having kids, etc., and passing on their genes. Well, once you have this philosophy, who's going to be seen as someone with bad genes? Clearly, those in your, you know, with psychiatric difficulties and in your mental hospitals. And this idea was really popularized first in the United States, and we began passing laws preventing the mentally ill from, or quote, the insane from marrying. Then we had the idea that, in fact, they needed to be kept in mental hospitals throughout their, you know, years of fertility, and once that takes hold in the early 1900s, you see that discharge rates for mental hospitals goes way down. Then we began sterilizing patients. We did this before Germany began doing it. And so there was this conception that the, quote, mentally ill are really a threat to a society, to the well-being of a society. Now, Hitler comes to power in 1933, and he comes to power on a eugenic platform, which basically is saying there are certain people in our society who are, quote, useless eaters or a drain on our society. And in 1939, and he begins implementing a wide-scale sterilization program of, quote, the mentally ill. And then in 1939, as he starts going to the final solution, and the final solution is to start eliminating useless eaters. And before they begin, with rounding up Jews and putting them in concentration camps, he started with the psychiatric patients of Germany, taking them from mental hospitals and, in fact, euthanizing them. And German scientists and psychiatrists actually helped direct that program. And it was there that Germany sort of learned how to develop gas chambers and sort of perfect the science of them, which were then, after they had been first tried with the psychiatric population, and as you said, about, I think it was about 75,000 killed, you know, they then took the gas chambers and moved them out east and erected them for mass killing of Jewish people. But that's the horrible history. And the only thing I would say here is this. Yes, it is a German history in terms of their taking this to the final step and gassing people and killing psychiatric patients. But eugenic attitudes toward the mentally ill really took root here in the United States first. And after Hitler came to power, there was actually an exchange of scientists where Nazi scientists would come to the United States to see how we were sterilizing people and to sort of learn from us, because it was seen as being done under a scientific agenda.
So let me liken it to this. You know, I remember in the 60s, as you do, Robert, that we assassinated presidents, key figures, people who were in our way, people who were showing us the light. You know, the Kennedys come to mind. Martin Luther King comes to mind, right?
Right.
We went, it was like boom, 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 boom.
Right.
Dead, dead, dead. Kill, kill, kill. We can't get away with that any longer. Or so we think. But we can drug people. Exactly.
Well, yeah.
And make them non-effective, non-thinkers, non-producers.
Yeah, I think you have to really ask what is going on in a big picture way. Why
yes.
Well, a couple things. So why are we medicating so many kids and diagnosing them with ADHD and putting them on drugs? Well, if you look at ADHD, the symptoms, it's really like failure to behave as we would like this child to behave in class. It's like a classroom adaptation thing. And if you look at a lot of our classrooms, of course, they're often crowded with kids, and often they don't get oftentimes they arrive at school with a terrible, you know, breakfast or no breakfast, having eaten drank Coke and that sort of thing. They don't get exercise during the day. And next thing you know, we're sort of pathologizing that, you know, the children, as opposed to saying, well, are we raising our children in a healthy way? And now going a step further, you know, there are laws. We are really expanding in the United States at the state level our laws that allow for forced treatment of antipsychotics, both in the hospital but when you get out as well. So even after you get released, you can be under a court order demanding that you take antipsychotics on a more permanent basis. So state authority over people who get, you know, with a psychiatric diagnosis is increasing dramatically. There's an incredible curbing of civil liberties. And what, in my mind, among other things that's so alarming about this, you would hope we would have data showing that antipsychotics improve lives over the long term, 3, 5, 7, 10 years. Instead, what our data shows is that these drugs shrink the brain, that shrinkage is associated with sort of increasing emotional lethargy, cognitive decline. We also have evidence showing that these medications can cause a lot of physical problems that are associated with early death. So we don't, as we expand our control over the, quote, mentally ill, we do so under the idea that, we're providing them with necessarily helpful medication. But the data doesn't support that, not over the long term. And so you really, I think the time will come, I hope the time will come, when we really look back at what we're doing today and saying, good God, what were we doing? And how is it consistent with, some sense of protection of civil liberties in this country?
Well, I think the breaking news coming out of Canada and New Zealand about, and I love the headline, controversial supplement Empower Plus proven effective, is the start of changing that paradigm. And how, if that we're starting to maybe drop the veil and start looking at nutrition versus medication. We have a long ways to go. It's going to take a lot of education. You have done a great job with your book. I've interviewed David Healy and Anne Blake Tracy on the show, and we'll keep doing these interviews just to keep reminding people, but I think, Robert, too, the whole stigma around mental illness is so huge that people want to be managed because
right.
they're so afraid of what will happen if they come off their drugs.
Right. Sure. And, one of the things is people can have really bad, there can be real problems when you come off your drugs. And all those problems are always attributed to, quote, the disease, the disorder, without any societal understanding of the ways that withdrawal effects could be coming into play with drug-related withdrawal symptoms. And just going back real quickly about what you talk about supplements and all, that's a whole different approach. The idea with supplements, nutrients, good diet is to look at, like, well, how do we help the human mind be well, stay well? And obviously, there's a, you know, it's a wellness approach. And actually, all of us need, I think, things such as exercise, meaning, good diet, really to be of healthy mind and spirit. And that's what, I think that is part of that approach. Whereas drugs are really a disease approach, and you sort of say, we're going to fix a disease. And the problem is, we don't know of the pathology, so we're trying to fix a mystery, so to speak. And I think it's also, it does lead to stigmatization, because it says there's something wrong with these people's brains, right? They're somehow ill, almost permanently ill. And that's out of sync with what we really know about, you know, psychiatric problems. Because if we try to understand the natural course of, say, depression or even mania, and even psychosis to a large degree, so often these were episodic, that people would have problems and those problems would clear up. It wasn't a permanent illness. So this is what's battling right now, this sort of conception. When you have a psychiatric problem, is it a sign of a pathology? Necessarily so. A permanent illness that needs to be fixed? Or can it be something more transient, evidence of some problem in your life and maybe some biological, and maybe ill health due to poor diet, not sleeping, that sort of thing?
Well, you know, and yeah, and those two things are huge. And what we're, I mean, our diets have changed dramatically. We've talked about that, but we also have a lack of minerals in our diet. And
our
that is what stimulates the electromagnetic frequencies in the brain. And our foods are devoid of minerals. Our soils are devoid of minerals. And these are, you know, these are huge pieces that we're just starting to explore. And yet the True Hope and Power Plus now has 24 peer-reviewed published studies. One other thing, and then we're going to have to slip off to a break, Robert. And one thing I've never mentioned, listeners, and I'm going to mention now, the True Hope and Power Plus, truehope.com, offers micronutrient support services with professionally trained staff that will help you and work with your doctors on titrating you and coming off your meds as you're building that nutritional support in your brain. This is not like a supplement you go to the health food store and buy off the shelf and everyone says, well, good luck with that. This is a proven product and with trained professionals that can monitor you as you're building your nutritional reserve and then titrate you as you are coming down. Robert, we've got one last segment. We need to talk about gun violence and the link between psychotropic drugs. I mean, you and I talked in October, and if I'm counting right, I could name at least 6 incidents since October to the end of January.
Yeah, I would think it's more than that, but I'm sure there's at least 6.
Well, 6 that you could major that have made it into the major media. Actually, I think there were just 2 last week.
Right, I know.
So
was
yeah,
one
I'm
Maryland,
probably
so.
Yeah, wrong on that one as well. So we need to start looking at this. And so when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about gun violence, psychotropic drugs. You're listening to Holy Hormones, Honey, the greatest story never told. We'll be right back.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Understanding your mind, mood, and hormone cycle is dedicated to all the women who have ever experienced a hormone fluctuation, to the generations of women who have died because they had forgotten the source of their being. The richly illustrated, groundbreaking book, co-authored by Leslie Carroll Botha and H. Sandra Chevalier Batik, is the product of a 9-year project which represents the author's shared passion and unified purpose to provide women with the education they need to reclaim their bodies and their souls. Find the book today. Click the link on the radio show page.
Are you taking medications for depression, anxiety, or hyperactivity? Are you one of the millions of people who have experienced negative side effects from your medication? Do you notice that you just don't feel like yourself? For decades, the nutrient therapy leaders at True Hope have helped tens of thousands of children and adults replace their medications with Empower Plus, an all-natural multivitamin and mineral complex clinically proven to fix the issues rather than cover them up. If you or someone you know is ready for a natural solution that works, go to www.truehope.com to learn more. 20 medical journal publications show that the Empower Plus formulation can replace harsh medications. Thousands of people taking all-natural Empower Plus are medication-free without a return of symptoms. Go to www.truehope.com or call 888-878-3467 to try a bottle of Empower Plus today. Type in offer code RADIO for 25% off your first order. Again, that's www.truehope.com or 888-878-3467.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are tuned in to Holy Hormones, Honey, with Leslie Carol Botha. To call into our program today, please dial 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to leslie@holyhormones.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Holy Hormones, Honey, the greatest story never told. You know, I would love to hear from you. Please do email me at leslie@holyhormones.com and let me know what you're interested in hearing on this show. Send me your questions. Send me your comments so I can help get the guests like Robert Whitaker and others who can address these concerns. This is an informational, educational exchange, and that's what I love doing most. I have an article on my blog this morning, holyhormones.com. Off topic, Robert, but it's still right on topic. HRT therapy may increase risk of acute pancreatitis. We discussed this a couple of weeks ago with Dr. Margarita Ochoa-Maya, my favorite endocrinologist, when she was on the show. One in two people are being diagnosed with pancreatitis these days. And now there is a study coming out, and this was published in the Canadian Medical Association Journal on January 27th of this year, that there is indeed a link between HRT, hormone replacement therapy, and pancreatitis. Robert, we don't even know. I mean, that's a synthetic hormone. That's affecting the brain. We do know that, but we don't even know the pathological illnesses that these psychotropic drugs might even be causing, let alone these other mental disturbances, correct?
Yeah, I mean, the biology of mental disorders, so to speak, just basically remains unknown. So it's really what we're doing is we're throwing a wrench into how the mind works, the brain works. We don't know. There's nothing known to be wrong that we're fixing, and you know that's not a drug therapeutic approach that is particularly sophisticated. And you can see why it could be so problematic over the long term. This is a real problem with medications in general, in that, you know, we get medications like the antibiotics that are so fantastic at curbing acute episodes, say, of bacterial infections. And then in the 60s, we start using drugs for treating chronic disorders, or so-called chronic disorders sometimes. But we never had a mechanism for really assessing how they affect people over the long term, whether it be hormone replacement therapy or, you know, statins, cholesterol-lowering drugs. So in that sense, for the past 50 years, we've begun using all sorts of medications long-term, and that's a new thing. I saw something the other day that the average 60-year-old is taking 4 drugs today. I mean, it's wild.
The average 60-year-old is taking 4 drugs.
On a daily basis, which is incredible when you think about the sense of, shows how they've sort of pathologized all aspects of life.
Old age.
Yeah, old age.
Yeah, well, I'm 60, ain't that old anymore.
No, that's what I like to think.
Yeah, not at all. You don't have any drugs in your medicine cabinet. I don't have any drugs in my medicine cabinet. We were joking about that. I've heard plenty of stories of elders who are quote unquote terminal who are taken off their drugs, and guess what? They rebound.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I believe drugs have their place, but you got to approach them in this really sort of cautious way, and I do believe you want to try to generally use them as, you know, for acute problems as opposed to chronic problems. I mean, I know there's some people that maybe, you know, antihypertensives or something. Some drugs that seem to, or insulin for diabetes, have a good sort of long, may have a good long-term risk-benefit profile. But, you know, in general, I think you want to try to find other ways to health.
All right. One last topic to cover here on this show, and I thank you for your time and your wealth of information. Listeners, you're going to love this one. A website called Ammoland came out with an article in April of last year, I believe. Yeah, April 1st, about April Fool's Day. But actually, nearly every mass shooting in the last 20 years shares one thing in common, and it's not weapons. And certainly I could see where the gun industry would get involved in this, because it's the first thing that happens after a mass killing, Robert, is that the gun laws are at fault. And yeah, I say at some extent, yes, because children are getting guns in their hands. But most importantly, children on drugs are getting guns in their hands. And we're seeing this rash of mass killings across the United States. Children have become murderers.
Right. Well, I personally do think it would be nice to limit access to weapons.
I agree.
But what you're getting at here is this, and does exposure to psychiatric medications, you know, can it carry the risk of, doing crazy violent things, sort of stirring violent thoughts, stirring violent actions? And what you do see in the data quite clearly is that SSRIs can have that effect. They can agitate people in ways, probably through, you know, cause an akathisia, et cetera, that lead to both suicidal and homicidal impulses. And the data is there in different studies. Same antipsychotics can also cause akathisia, and that's this inner agitation that is well known to be associated with homicidal impulses. There's also things that can happen when people come, you know, off drugs, particularly abruptly. They can get a real flare-up of symptoms of anxiety, akathisia, that can really feel like a torment. And you know, so you can have these interactions with psychiatric medications that can increase the risk of violence. But here's the thing, and so often when you try to see when one of these horrible events erupts, You try to see, well, was the person taking psychiatric medications? Had they been on psychiatric medications? Had they abruptly come off psychiatric medications? What is the role of these? What is the possible role of this drug use? And unfortunately, because of the political landscape, we're not allowed to have a real societal discussion about that. We're not allowed to have a real investigation of that question. You know, what role are these drugs playing in all these horrible tragedies? And that's straight politics, and it speaks both, frankly, to the prestige of a medical specialty. I'm talking about psychiatry, and also obviously the clout that the pharmaceutical industry has through its lobbying of, you know, payments to members of Congress, et cetera. It's lobbying payments, but it's a tragedy. And finally, one other thing that I don't think we really you do have the sense that these medications can sometimes be agitating drugs, cause something called akathisia. The other question that may be at play is, say, antipsychotics, they can dim frontal lobe activity. Antidepressants sometimes can sort of diminish frontal lobe capacity as well. And this is the part of our brain that monitors our actions and sort of says, you know, that's a crazy-ass thing to do if you're thinking about picking up a gun. And the question is that diminishment play a role where next thing you know you have some kid, you know, walking into school with a gun, that sort of thing. And my point is, these things are tragedies, you know, and you know, changing how our children go to school and how safe they think their schools are. And you'd think we'd have the political willpower to really investigate this question, but we don't.
Well, and I think it's even much more than schools. I mean, going to any public arena causes some sort of fear. I mean, we've got the Super Bowl this weekend.
Right.
What is going to happen? Some irate person on drugs, exasperated by some beer, and his team losing. What is that going to do?
Well, I'm sure there's going to be, you know, there's always going to a professional game now. You sort of go through, you know, you'll be sort of going through a sense of that. Make sure you don't bring a weapon into the arena. There'll be some sort of security checks at the gate. I'm sure they will be this weekend as well.
I'm sure they will be. I mean, there was. I remember the days walking into Yankee Stadium. You know, those days are long gone. Now we go through security checks everywhere. Is that really how we want to live our life, folks? Do you really want to live in fear? I mean, I start driving a car and I wonder how many people on drugs. I mean, how many people are really alert, and how many? What is my risk for even driving a car? I mean, I'm not living in fear or anything, but this is part of our reality.
Well, you know, Maine had Maine did an analysis of its traffic accidents, and there was an incredible percentage of accidents due to people on benzodiazepines. You know, which are these, you know, sedating drugs, tranquilizing drugs. My daughter, actually, she was riding. She's a school teacher in New York. She was on her bicycle, and someone basically ran her over, and that woman was on benzodiazepines, the driver. So you have a lot of impaired people behind wheels. It's not just alcohol.
Well, I'm glad I raised the issue. I did not. I am glad I raised the issue. But I think we all of us need to start seriously thinking about, is this how we want to live? In fear of ourselves, in fear of others around us, in fear of sending our children off to school, in fear of going to public arenas. I think, really, I mean, we talk about terrorism, being vulnerable to terrorists from foreign countries, but really, folks, we're posing more of a threat to ourselves these days. And the tipping point, I mean, there's so many other things involved too, Robert. There's our stress level, our financial level, our housing levels, the weather, the flooding, the icing in Atlanta, there's so many things that are compounding people's lives these days that the thinking is, oh my God, I need to be going on some antidepressants, but...
Yeah, I think there's a lot of alarms out there telling us that maybe we got to figure out how to arrange our society so it's a much healthier society. And I think it does start with food, good food, nutritious food, that sort of thing. But then you start saying, well, how do you build schools that are more nurturing, that realize the kids need to run out and play and run around, and they shouldn't be sitting in chairs for, 7 hours a day. And then, talk about there are so many stresses around work and finances and, both parents always working all the time. So there's a lot of stresses out there that raise questions about how we're organizing our society, I think.
You know, and it's not that these supplements take away those stresses. It helps people manage them better. Instead of lashing out at partners, at children. I mean, there's another whole issue right there. How many relationships are in a disarray because of mood disorders within the family, depression, anxiety, drugs in the family, prescription drugs in the family, even more so than illegal drugs in the family. Robert, do you have any closing statements to leave with our listeners?
Well, I just think that my only closing statement really is this, is we need to move from this thing that we're going to treat pathologies, like with some miracle drugs. I really think the question is, how do we stay well, or how do we get well? How do we live physically well lives, emotionally well lives? And I do think it starts with diets and diets, foods that do have nutrients in them, micronutrients that have been leached out of our food processing. Exercise, socialization, meaning in life, and really have a focus on that. And what can help so much, I think.
And that leads right into next week's show, Thursday, February 6th, when I interview Anthony Steffen, the founder of True Hope, and the True Hope and Power Plus that we have alluded to throughout this show, and this controversial supplement now being proven by research and studies to have a tremendous effect on ADHD and other mood disorders. That's coming up next week on Holy Hormones, honey. In the meantime, everyone, take care. and blessings.
Thanks for tuning in to Holy Hormones, Honey. Please join host Leslie Carol Botha again next Thursday at 12 noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Have a great and healthy week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.